Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. On this week's show, we'll dive into Daredevil. The latest arrival in the Marvel Cinematic Universe comes not to broadcast or cable and not to theaters, but to Netflix. We'll talk about the fights and friends and the broken legs of it all. In our second segment, we'll consider credulity, the moments when we believe what we're told and the moments when we can't. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so don't go away.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out the Fresh Air podcast. Fresh Air interviews are a great way to get to know people like Jon Stewart, Larry David, Amy Poehler, Louis C.K., Michael Keaton, Bradley Cooper, the creators of Mad Men, Better Call Saul, Justified, House of Cards. You can find Fresh Air's podcast at npr.org/podcasts.
We've got superheroes and strained credibility on the agenda, but first, let's meet the panel here in historic Studio 44. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And directly to my right is Stephen Thompson. Stephen, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And joining us, lending her voice all the way from Boston, Mass., our friend and one of our many favorite librarians, Margaret H. Willison. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, Linda.
It's always so wonderful to hear your voice on the other end of the line coming to us from the joyful city of Boston. Now, first on our agenda this week is Daredevil, all 13 first season episodes of which recently arrived on Netflix, created by Drew Goddard, who also wrote Cloverfield and Cabin in the Woods. It tells a superhero story of which I am hoping that Glenn can flesh out some basics.
Sure. Daredevil is a character created in 1964 by Stan Lee and Bill Everett with some help by Jack Kirby. He is Matt Murdock, a lawyer who is blind yet has the ability to sense the world around him very acutely. When he was first created, he was a wisecracking, swashbuckling, acrobatic superhero, but he was always very ground level, set in Hell's Kitchen, you know, just an urban vigilante. This is about the point where I would normally get up on my high horse and say, you know, superheroes are, it's a big genre and it can be approached in a lot of different ways, and we seem to have been stuck for the past few decades in this very adolescent idea that grim and gritty is the only way to go, is the only way to approach this material. I can't say that about Daredevil, because grim and gritty was, in a very real sense, created for him, by him, basically. Frank Miller, in the early 80s, came along and basically did away with all the backstory of that happy, smiling, swashbuckling hero, and went double down on the noir and the ninjas, because that's what he does. It's always the Phoenician blinds and katanas, if Frank Miller's around. And he made him into an anti-hero, made it very dark and grim. And basically, the people who came after him, writers like Brian Michael Bendis and Ed Brubaker, and even up to more recently Mark Waid, have played with a lot of the tropes that Miller established, where Matt Murdock is just a luckless hero who cannot catch a break and is always getting the snot beat out of him. And that's pretty much who he is. Now, in the 70s and 80s, his Hell's Kitchen setting made sense because it was a grimy, you know, urban hellscape.
Right.
Now Hell's Kitchen is more like Hex Kitchen.
Yeah.
It's been gentrified all to heck. And, you know, so it's like he protects the streets. He protects these six Wachovias on the same block. It makes the street safe for bottomless Bellinis at drag brunch. It's a very different place than it used to be.
Yeah. What did you think of the Netflix adaptation?
The inner fanboy in me was just delighted to see a lot of these old Bendis and Miller and Brubaker characters and situations come to life. I didn't love this, but I couldn't stop watching it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Got to 10.
Okay.
There is an uptick in quality toward the end of the season, I think. And I think we disagree on this, Linda Holmes. But when the show is just about the fighting, these stunts are amazing. This fight coordinator, Philip J. Silvera, deserves all the plaudits to be laid at his feet. But the genre elements that surround it are kind of disappointingly generic.
Well, Margaret, I want to ask you, because you were kind enough to sort of offer to jump in on this conversation. How much of Daredevil have you watched?
I watched 5 episodes.
And what are you thinking? How are you feeling about it right now?
I like it. It's a solid noir. The Girl Fridays could be sassier.
I believe you know, that's Girls Friday.
thank you. Girls Friday, like Attorneys General.
Mm-hmm.
They could be sassier. But my limited tolerance for lines like, I can't be the man I want to be. I have to be the man this city needs. So far, it has been tried, but not exceeded. And there's an interesting dynamic they're creating with the main villain and the main hero sort of running in parallel, a little bit like Raylan and Boyd on Justified, that I am always excited to see in fiction.
So it's working for you for the most part.
Yes, but it's haunted by Hawkeye. You know, I read the comic by Matt Fraction. It's terrific. It has such an informed and specific sense of place, and there's so much more space for jokes and playfulness while still telling this very similar story of sort of like, what kind of superhero, down on your luck superhero, average guy superhero.
Right.
If this were that show, I would be ecstatic. And instead, it's like Gotham, but good.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, Thompson, how about you, buddy?
Okay, Glenn Weldon and I are both noted endorsemen. Mm-hmm. This show dropped on Friday. We are taping on Monday. And in the interim has been some of the most beautiful weather that I have in Washington, D.C., that I have ever seen. It coincided with the full bloom of all the cherry blossoms. Now, I am ordinarily anti-cherry blossom, but they were too beautiful for even me to resist. I also discovered that my windows, many of which have always had storm windows in them, I discovered this cache of screens in the house I've been living in for 8 years. And I was able to open all the windows and let in the beautiful spring weather.
How many episodes, Thompson?
I'm on my fourth.
Okay.
I cannot imagine. I did put aside this beautiful spring weather to watch this grim, joyless toil of a show that is an expertly crafted, very carefully put together, very stylish and skillful incarnation of something I don't want.
Yeah.
Honest to God, it says as much about me as it does about this show, which is just full of this endless thudding, bone-cracking whomping. It's just whomping the show.
Whomping head-crushing.
It's whomping colon the show.
Yeah.
And to me, that just only goes so far. I will say that I had a little bit of the reaction Glenn did where it was a little hard to put down for as much as it's not my thing. It does a very nice job of making you want to see where it goes next. So it's one of these things where I know it's good, but I don't want to watch it.
I think I had some of the same reactions in that I am very on board for the fact that the show is creatively shot. At the end of the second episode, there's a very long, continuous shot while they have a fight in a hallway. Mm-hmm. I totally recognize the amount of work that goes into that. I think it's more fun than the similar shot in True Detective. I can only imagine the amount of choreography that went into that. And the entire time that I was watching it, I found myself a bit distracted by imagining the choreography and imagining someone off stage saying, 3, 2, 1, you, you know? I think there is some creative use of effects and visuals in the times that they are trying to convey what Daredevil's powers are, which is
basically super heightened intuition.
Well, it's super heightened senses, and I didn't really get it either. That's the problem. I think they try to convey a lot with things like there's a moment when he's having a fight and all of a sudden you see these chains jingle and he's going to do something with the chains. But for me, the things that I would come to praise about this show are some of the acting. I think the acting, particularly from some of the supporting actors, Vondi Curtis Hall, Vincent D'Onofrio, I like the guy, Eldon Henson, who plays the best friend, whose name is
Foggy.
For some reason. Yeah. Mm. Even I am capable of recognizing it's good fight choreography, and I think the fights are solidly shot so that I can mostly keep track of what's going on, which is always a plus for me.
It helps that he wears a mask, so that differentiates him from the person whomping.
But I will say I have two main problems. The one, I don't care about anything that's happening on the show. This, to me, is a boring hero fighting a bunch of Russians, kind of like the guys who would have been the villains on MacGyver in the mid-80s. Russian mobsters talking like Russian mobsters.
Fake Russian accents.
Yeah.
Russians are the new Nazis.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just not that interesting. The creatives on this show, as near as I can tell, appear to be almost exclusively men. The only women that show up of any note in the show are, at least in those first four episodes, are one who is a victim and one who is introduced wiping blood off of a guy who's been in a fight. And it's not that they're not good. Rosario Dawson in particular plays the one who's wiping the blood off, and I think she's wonderful.
Yep.
I have trouble caring about this. And I don't care for the central performance by Charlie Cox does nothing for me. I think it is incredibly wooden. I'm sorry. I don't normally single out actors to say don't like that performance, but I don't like that performance. And my other big thing is that the visual palette is so limited.
It's very dark.
I understand noir. I understand the way this is supposed to look. I understand this is dark, dark, gritty, gritty streets. Other than the movement.
Sure.
Color-wise, palette-wise, visually uninteresting.
Tonally.
Yeah.
I've spent so much time with Christopher Nolan that I was like, oh, wow, look, there's like a warm chocolate brown in this shot. That's great.
This show has so much going for it. As we talked about, it's stylish, the action, the performances. I really like the performance of the guy who plays Wesley, who is the second in command. But there is a deliberateness to the pacing of this show, which doesn't speed up toward the end, which is very deliberate, to give us more time with these characters. I understand what they're doing. They want to give us, they don't want to foist these flat characters on us and just have them not feel real, not feel rounded. So Wesley, for example, is given time to kind of chew on his lines, and we can see the gears running behind it. But what they do again and again is they shove a couple characters together, and I'm just wondering, you're not deepening, you're not raising, you're not changing anything. I'm just seeing these two characters for 5 minutes doing exactly what they were doing in the first minute. It's an interesting approach. And the other thing is the violence is weird, because we get, in the Marvel Universe, we get lots of punchy punch, and we get lots of bruise and lots of whack. We don't get a lot of blood, per se.
Yeah. This is a squishy show.
Not a lot
show.
Of splatter.
And there's impalings.
So much splatter.
Yeah,
lots of eye violence.
And, of course, it's Netflix, so it's not conventional ratings, and I think the producers have said something. They're going for something like NC-16, whatever that might mean. And that's kind of the zone it exists in. But again, as you mentioned, Linda, they raise the stakes by beating up on women and children, which is, you know, once they do that, it feels kind of regressive and lazy. Like, of course you're going to raise the stakes. Of course we're going to care. Are they going to kick a puppy next? What's next?
Yeah, that the bit about the Russian mobsters who are trafficking in innocent people, it feels like a cheap shortcut. And I think it's a really interesting point you make about the NC-16 violence of it. You have this show. It is clearly a kind of TVMA, kind of grim show with a lot of violence and a little bit of swearing. But like, if you're going to go that route, do more adult stuff than just snapping bones and running stakes through eyeballs. I mean, for me, I remember predicting on this show at one point, like, there was going to be this shift in the tides where it was like sex up, violence down, and like these TV shows might get sexier and less violent. And I think that was just wishful thinking, because I just feel like you could make this like a sexier show. I guess I'm just asking for the show to be something I like instead of something I don't. But I found the violence kind of thudding and repetitive and just not as exciting, given that you have decided you're going to be an NC-16 show.
Yeah. One day we're going to get a superhero show or movie where the dialogue doesn't function at the level of, we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah.
You know, someday we're going to get there. We're not. Today is not that day.
Yeah.
You know, like you mentioned Justified, Margaret, that show is playing with some of that same duality. The dialogue is just filled
with... So much
with
more fun.
That makes you smile as you listen to it. As you listen to
character?
The way... Exactly. The way people express themselves. You're in. You're totally in. Even though it's kind of a good versus evil kind of thing going on there. It's just going on in a much more interesting way.
Yeah. I feel like if I had a more specific sense of the New York that these characters are inhabiting, it would make such a difference to my enjoyment of the show. And that was really my central excitement about this project with Marvel, which is this is the first of, I think, 4 interlocking series that they're telling about sort of New York street-level superheroes. And that's a really cool project to me. Like, I'm very excited to see how all of that unfolds and how they interlock. But if this is the New York that they're starting with, if it's this just kind of tired, empty idea that doesn't feel like a real city, it's going to be harder for me to be excited about it.
Yeah, I'm very conflicted about this because we happen to have landed on a collection of people who are less enthused about this show than most of my friends are who write about television. You can read some really, really positive, and I encourage you to do this because this is not like a representative sample of the response that I've seen this show get. There are some very positive reviews. My friend Alan Sepinwall, who we often talk about, likes this show. I was back and forth on Twitter with NPR's own Peter Sagal, who really likes this show and is a kind of a superhero guy and a genre guy. I was ready for this. I wanted to like this. I like a lot of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
I rarely feel like the Marvel stuff is this humorless. I understand this is the whole, like, whenever I say this, I get a lot of, like, not everything's supposed to be jokes. This is the noir version. This is the Nolan-y version. I get it.
Yeah.
And I have enjoyed lots of superhero movies and lots of violent movies. I have violent movies that I've really enjoyed in my history. I was a big fan of Cabin in the Woods, which is an incredibly bloody and in some ways very dark movie. I could not lock into this.
As much as a fanboy, I loved the Miller run and the Bendis and the Brubaker and others. When Mark Waid came along with Paulo Rivera in 2011 to take this character and say, you know what? He's going to start winning again. We're going to lighten this up a bit. That is such a fun series of comics. That's just, it's the stuff that you love. It's all this backstory. It's all this history plus a sliver of light. And that's kind of what I was hoping for.
Yeah. I do feel like people going into the show should know things like there is a character who gets beheaded as his head gets repeatedly slammed in a car door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's...
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
I didn't say which character.
Spoiler alert
and
for his
say
head.
Who was slamming the door.
Yes.
Just things are very spoiled for his head. His head is like, everything for me has been spoiled.
I'm out.
I'm off.
He really just crushed the fun out of it for him.
I feel like we're a little bit out of the reception that the show has mostly gotten, but
I also think I like it more than you guys do. I have problems. Like, I see a creative direction it could have taken that I would have liked better, but I'm not mad at the creative direction it's
good.
Taken. I'm definitely going to watch the rest of the show.
Good, good, good.
As am I. I'm in.
Well, I'll be interested. I will be interested to hear what the folks who are listening have to say about this show, because I know it does have a lot of supporters. And so find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about credulity, the things that we believe, the things that we don't believe. So stick around.
Hi, I'm Crystal, and I'm calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and this message are from TastingRoom.com, the only wine club that fits your personal tastes. Here's how it works. Tasting Room sends you a kit with sample-size bottles of wine. You sip each one, log on to their site, and tell them which wines you liked. Tasting Room then picks wines for you based on your tastes. You get your first full case 1 month later. The shipments come every 3 months from when you started. Visit tastingroom.com/NPR for the wine club where your taste is the only one that matters. Thanks.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. So our other topic this week, we got this one, I believe, from Ms. Margaret, who called it On Credulity. Now, Margaret, why don't you explain a little about what you meant by this topic?
Well, you say you got it from me, but that means that I got it from the long list of possible topics you guys have discussed over the years.
Ah, yes, yes.
So I guess what we were sort of talking about is art where you enter it and some amount of knowledge you have about the subject at hand interferes with how you're capable of consuming the show or song or sporting event or anything. Just any time your real world information is interfering with your ability to consume this artificial constructed simulation.
Right. So this would be like if you're watching something and they get like the Dewey Decimal System wrong. Like,
actually,
that's
I'm strictly Library of Congress.
Oh,
but...
strictly Library of Congress. See? So can you give me an example, Margaret, of something that you have watched and that it has been a bit interfered with for you by your pre-existing knowledge?
Well, I mean, my example is trite, and it's not necessarily to do with my job. It's to do with The Departed. but Martin Scorsese,
because it's Boston,
and the town. Because in both cases, it's just depicting Boston as sort of like this like hardened city of like tough criminals. And it's like I've lived in this city my entire life, and I'm not saying that there's no criminal activity here, but for the most part, it's not my experience of living in the city, and I'm just very suspicious of the artistic intent of constantly telling these stories about Boston. Just seems like they want organized crime stories, but organized crime stories they can put Leonardo DiCaprio in the lead of.
Right.
So hashtag not all Boston.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yes. True. How about you? How about you, Stephen?
The first example that leapt out at me, if this NPR thing doesn't work out, mm-hmm. I want to start a consulting firm where my job is, let's say you are making a TV show or a movie, and it contains a mocked up newspaper or website, I will tell you whether what you have put on the screen looks like a real newspaper or website. I will rewrite your headlines. Mm-hmm. I will rewrite your subheads especially. Mm-hmm. I will go through and I will tell you whether that would ever run in a newspaper.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just me, mm-hmm. but man, it just drives me bonkers. And I am uniquely qualified for this job because
yes.
I was the copy editor of The Onion
you
for
were.
12 years.
I've heard that.
I turned a lot of things that didn't look quite like newspaper headlines mm-hmm. into newspaper headlines.
And a format and humorist, my
I'm
friend.
I'm a big fan of punctuation humor. Anyway, mm-hmm. it drives me absolutely crazy. And the example that popped into my head was from an episode, one of my favorite episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's kind of this flashback to a killing in the 1950s. And it involves the Scooby Gang goes back and looks at like microfiche of the newspaper clipping. And the headline that they show at the time is like, "School Jock Kills Lover, comma, self." And in about 19 different ways, that is not what the headline would be.
School Jock Kills Lover, comma, self.
It's just like, first of all, when you are announcing that this event has happened, you don't know exactly what happened. Second of all, you wouldn't refer to him in the hometown newspaper that insensitively.
School Jock.
School Jock. I might be misremembering the headline.
Adios, School Jock.
It's just like, what the heck happened? Yeah. So, like, it's terrible that he did it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say he did it. You don't know.
You'd say School Jock allegedly shoots lover, comma, self.
And there's absolutely a way that you would word a story like that that would still convey that this is when this killing happened.
Right.
And that kind of stuff just drives me nuts. It's that kind of, have you looked at a newspaper?
Yeah.
And I think part of it is these filmmakers and TV makers, whatever, just need to consult someone who's worked on a newspaper. And literally all you have to do is email a JPEG to somebody who's worked for a newspaper to tell you
they
whether...
They have free time.
Lord knows we have very little else to do.
It's interesting because you also mentioned looking at websites and there is a whole world of like fake versions of real websites that exist in the universe of shows like The Good Wife. And,
ULens on Smash?
Well, and my favorite one always, and I think I've mentioned this before, my favorite one is on Law & Order SVU. There's a site called Face Union. And so it's like they met on Face Union. Like anyone would ever name their site Face
Sounds
Union.
Sounds kind of horrifying, actually. Sounds kind of biological and anatomical in a way.
Face Union.
I think it was also another episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Possibly was the Once More with Feeling, where we see a newspaper headline, thousands dead or whatever. Monsters certainly not involved, say, authorities. Something like something they were playing with. Don't quote me on that, but it was close to that.
Mm-hmm.
John Gardner said that fiction is a vivid and continuous dream. Vivid is important. That means you have to do your job. Continuous is equally, if not more so, because that means that the record doesn't skip. Over and over again, certain casting choices cause, for me, the record to skip. That television show Younger that you pointed out, starring Sutton Foster, you did a blog post about. Hilary Duff in this show plays a book editor. I'm sure she's very, very smart. I'm sure she's a wonderful person who is insightful, and I'm sure she's a reader. But there's a time when she has to translate a book from the finish. She's suggesting to the author a better translation, and it just feels like it was a cold day. Just she's mouthing them. Because
she's learned them phonetically.
She's learned them phonetically. The classic example, Denise Richards as a nuclear physicist in The World Is Not Enough, the record skips. Arnold Schwarzenegger as a human being, the record skips. Just doesn't work.
Yeah, only when he plays a giant robot. Now, I will say, the ultimate in this for me is that you should never go to law school if you ever want to watch a lawyer show ever again. Because one of the things that I like about Law & Order is that they have procedural steps that most shows do not realize exist, right? The fact that you even have, like, arraignment, and maybe you get out on bail, and maybe you don't. There are certain things, you know, they have an appeals court. They have certain things that are appealed in the middle of a trial and certain things that can't be, and they talk often about that stuff. They deal with the reality of plea bargains. In civil cases, they deal with the reality of settlements. All that stuff is good from a realism point of view. However, the thing that TV writers think opening statements and especially closing arguments are is so far from what they actually are. They are not you just getting up there and being like, I'm telling you right now, he's guilty. Like, that is not what it's for. It is for laying out what your evidence is going to be. It would not be interesting at all. They go on for hours. You lay out all your, and at the end you say, and then look, we had the testimony of Dr. So-and-so who showed you the chart where blah, blah, blah. You don't just get up there and make a speech. And you can't question a witness and ask, like, a ridiculously inappropriate question and be like, withdrawn. Yeah. That is not a thing. You will still get in trouble. Judges will punish you. So what I'm saying is, even if you were not a trial lawyer, which I was not a trial lawyer at the trial level, you should never know too much about something like, and I'm sure for all that they talk about the accuracy of the medicine on ER or whatever, I'm sure it's the same thing to watch a hospital show. Mm-hmm. If you ever were a doctor, you're like, you can't do that. Gray's Anatomy. You can't touch that person with that thing without changing your gloves or whatever it is. I don't know.
So basically what we're saying here is that too much knowledge can ruin art.
Well, one aspect that we hadn't gotten to touch on that is another pressure point for me with this is art, you know, to be autobiographical. If the autobiographical details don't match up to the way it's being presented by
right.
the artist, it
right.
can be really distracting. So for this, actually, this is very fancy. I sent Jessica a clip.
Here's Margaret laughing.
So what I can tell you about this song is that it's a jam. This is
right.
from 1989, the most recent album from Taylor Swift. And this particular song is called Bad Blood. And I can't hear that clip without doing a little bit of chair dancing. Like, mm-hmm, I enjoy mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. Kicky anthem. It's totally ruined for me because I know it is Taylor Swift calling out Katy Perry because Katy Perry stole Taylor Swift's backup dancers.
Really? Where do you know this from?
Well, okay.
So Taylor
okay, there
really
are a lot of very reliable sources.
I want to make sure that we are saying.
I'm going to construct a paper trail for you.
Allegedly, this is what it is about.
Allegedly. Taylor is very coy about this stuff. She constantly inserts hints about who the various different, you know, Romana Clefs
okay,
are
sure, yes.
about. So Taylor Swift made this comment, frenemy, did something unforgivable. Shortly thereafter, Katy Perry tweeted, beware of a Regina George in sheep's clothing.
Okay.
So coy, right back.
Mean girls, Glenn.
Okay,
mean
thanks.
Girls. This clued the Taylor sleuth internet into the fact that Katy Perry was probably the subject of the song. They also share an ex-boyfriend, and she did indicate that it was like a major female superstar. So she gave the category.
Mm-hmm. Getting closer.
And they investigated it. And
they investigated. They put their best people on it.
I want your gun and your badge on my desk.
Uh, They discovered that a bunch of backup dancers had left Taylor Swift mid-tour to go back to Katy Perry's tour. And so this was sort of put out there as the inciting incident that caused their quote-unquote friendship to quote-unquote fall apart.
Okay, did any of them pick up on the fact that nothing in that song actually rhymes?
Wow, backup dancer drama. So what you're saying, is if you know that it is about an incredibly petty argument about backup dancers, it is really hard to truly feel the jam of that song.
Well, right. Like, you can't insert yourself in as the wronged narrator of that song. Like, you know the wronged narrator of that song. And so instead of being like, yeah, like, that friend really cut me, and I still have scars in my back from her knife.
Yeah.
It's a mystery inside an enigma, inside a riddle, inside a dance belt.
I have to be like, Taylor, I feel like maybe you're overreacting here.
Right.
I have to sit in judgment of Taylor Swift's reactions to Taylor Swift's life, and I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, we've talked about world building before, and it's very difficult to do because you have to assert the rules that are going to be true in this world, but you can't over-explain them because it's just like when you're lying, you're giving too many details and people can tell. But a good author can just wave a hand and say, you know what? Warp drive. That's how we get to the stars.
Yeah.
Warp drive's a thing now. Let's all just follow these rules. Imagine how much work, how much logistical work went into the Harry Potter books where you're creating a world where magic can happen. Literally anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's this incredible hierarchies and structure just to kind of keep anything from happening
Right.
So that you are, it's all rigidly structured. And we have to, in our head, know exactly what recourse Harry Potter has and what he doesn't at any given moment in this world where anything can happen.
Well, and that's interesting that you would bring that up, because I remember when we saw one of the Hobbit movies, I remember saying to you, why doesn't he just send the birds earlier?
Oh.
Right?
There are actually 5 or 6 different reasons why the eagles cannot fly them to Mordor.
This is what I'm saying.
Because the eagles are a fractious and very proud species. They're not just going to be your Uber.
The eagles and Taylor Swift, both fractious and very proud.
That's right.
Well, this is what I'm saying, is that in order to understand, one of the things that you have to demonstrate in a world where you're asking people to be credulous is not only that things can happen, but that certain things can't happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you need, particularly in a world full of magic, you need an explanation for why they don't just do whatever.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just wish for 3 more wishes? Like, you kind of have to explain that, or everybody would wish for 3 more wishes.
Right?
But you have to lay those rules out, because part of credulity is not only believing that things can happen, but understanding why people don't take the simplest path, such as getting the birds to fly them to Mordor.
Oh, man, that would have saved me like 3 hours if those birds could have flown farther.
Very far.
Well, there was a whole, I remember they cut some stuff out, and Glenn was like, yeah, they explain it in the book. The birds can't do it.
They cut something out of like a 100-page book that they turned into 10 hours of movie.
Trust me.
I mean, I think we've all, located some biographical and some geographical and some occupational and some bird magic things that we believe and do not believe when it comes to credulity. All right. When we come back, we are going to get to our final and favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Did you know that Amy Poehler is a self-proclaimed snoop who reads people's journals? Or that John Waters was a judge at the Porn Oscars? Well, you would if you listened to Fresh Air with Terry Gross. You'll hear surprising stories from the artists, authors, and thinkers that you know, and also discover new ones. You can find Fresh Air's podcast at npr.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite part of the week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
You know, sometimes the things making us happy, you know, we've talked a lot about the Zaxxon rule. This is, you know, this is stuff that's unique to my life that, you know, you can't recommend to other people. And so much of my intake since the last time we recorded has been either watching Daredevil or going outside and seeing cherry blossoms. And neither of those things are necessarily what I can bring up as things making me happy. I mean,
we agree.
I do. But I can announce that I'm doing some upcoming traveling that will entail a certain amount of bonding with hopefully members of the public. Two of the cities and two of the related dates. One may interest Margaret H. Willison. I am, for the first time in my entire life, setting foot in Boston, Massachusetts. for some work-related foo-for-ah, and it looks, hopefully, like I will be doing some sort of meetup with the public on or around April 23rd. Mark your calendars. You know,
I'm just going to circle it with a big hug.
Oh, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and stuff for more information on those meetups. I'll be doing doing stuff with my pal Bob Boylan from All Songs Considered.
Nice.
And so,
we like Bob.
So Bob will be joining me, and we'll be hoisting a few surrounded by the public.
Fantastic.
The other date is April 25th on or about in Denver, Colorado, a city I have not visited since I was a little kid.
So the mountains of the West.
So if you are in the Mountain West and want to hang out, keep an eye on us on social media, but on or around April 25th, again with Bob Boylan.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Two things. I also am going to be doing some traveling on Friday. I light out. That's how we say it. We hobos who are riding the rails say it.
Lighting
out. On the Amtrak Writers Residency from Chicago to Seattle,
oh,
from
that's
Seattle
right. The thing
to
that only
LA.
Like 24 people in the whole country got. That
is
a prestigious fellowship.
I wouldn't know. I don't know. it's Chicago to Seattle, Seattle to LA, LA back to Seattle. I'm not going to have much time in any of those cities because I don't have that much free time at the day job, so I need to kind of squeeze it all into a week, but it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I will be tweeting dumb dad jokes along the way if I can get Wi-Fi.
As a dumb dad, I thank you.
I appreciate that.
The
other thing that's making me happy is, Jessica, play Misty for me.
Who here hates reality television? I hate all of you. I am so tired of people complaining about reality television. Oh, it's so stupid, it's so stupid, it's the downfall of America. It's just stupid people fighting with each other. It's so stupid. What is sports? Sports is stupid, stupid people. Illiterate adults with accidental children fighting with each other for 3 hours at a time. You people watch it every Sunday like it's good. I want to watch people fight too. I just want to understand why. Because you are wearing different colored helmets, that is not a reason to fight. Because Melissa Gorga did not go to Teresa's baby's christening, that is a reason to fight.
All right. That is a new comedy album from Guy Branum. It's called Effable, E-F-F-A-B-L-E. Came out this week. He is a stand-up comic. He is a comedy writer. He is also the host of a podcast called Pop Rocket, which is to this show what Eve Harrington is to Margot Channing. And the reason I can say that with certainty is because I just use a reference from a 65-year-old movie.
I knew that reference.
Thank you, Margaret. You are the one. He is the real deal. He is hilarious. Just note in that clip the control, the use of cadence. These jokes are perfectly constructed, but they're delivered with this very languorous, sly panache, I guess you'd call it. The last
panache,
word,
I guess you'd call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think so. The last word in each sentence is just this, it's like a whip crack. It's just all this kinetic energy, and it all lands like bam. I hope I'm not misleading people with that choice of clip, because he's not inside baseball. He's not a gay comic, capital G, capital C. I mean, he is a gay comic, but he's not like the kind of gay comic that kills on like the gay cruises or at drag brunch.
By the way, a gay comic killing on gay cruises would make a really good mystery novel.
There you go.
Yes.
He's not boutique.
Can you write that in your residency?
Yeah, that's right. His stuff just kills because it's funny. I recommend to you the clips Apartment Dog, Renaissance Pope, and Canada, among others. So that is Guy Branum, Effable, just came out this week. Buy it.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Margaret H. Hula Hoop Willison, what is making you happy this week?
So one, I got to participate in two other podcasts that I really like that I mentioned because I think book pop culture happy hour would be super into them. So one is called Overdue, and that is hosted by Craig and Andrew, and that is you explain a book you are reading for the first time to your hosts, and I happily read Little House on the Prairie for them. And the other is hosted by Renata and Kate, and it is called The Worst Bestsellers. And I unhappily forced them to read Model Land by Tyra Banks.
Nice.
Oh, Margaret.
Which I am thrilled to not be reading right now. I cannot recommend you read any part of it except for the acknowledgments, which I think everyone should read immediately.
Oh, yeah.
It's 7 pages of her thanking all the luxury hotels she wrote at. And I'm not lying.
I have read some of that book. I cannot say I read the whole thing, but I have read some of that book. You are not overselling it.
My soul feels lighter. Like, I locked my soul in prison because I decided to read this book.
Right.
But now my soul is free again. Happily, it left me with time to consume probably my newest obsession, which is iZombie, the new TV show on the CW, based on a comic book series that Glenn Weldon recommended on Pop Culture Happy Hour.
I did.
Which is great. And it's also from Diane Ruggiero and Rob, not the Matchbox 21, Thomas, who created Veronica Mars. And it shares a lot of DNA with that show, small, sassy, blonde, solving mysteries, along with a lot of specific DNA of its own that I find really interesting and fun, specifically an aspect where she takes on the characteristics of people whose brains she eats. So for an episode, she will be an incredibly sensuous person who loves painting. And for another episode, she'll be an incredibly paranoid, you know, ex-Asian gang member or infected with that personality. And they play with that really interestingly in terms of her interpersonal relationships. So there are 6 episodes of that up. I think they're all available on the CW website. Terrific. You should definitely check it out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Margaret. Making me happy this week, A, is our pal Mark Hirsch, who was on this show long ago, back in the day, in an early episode. Also hails from Boston, like Margaret does, has a brand new baby, so I'm shouting out the baby.
Yeah, this is making me happy, too.
Yeah, the heck with the parents, I mean, right? But but it's a really good-looking baby, I gotta say. Unusually cute baby, even for a baby. So shout out to that baby. Hello, baby. a couple things from television. First of all, Stephen will be very happy to know that Bethany Frankel is back on Real Housewives of New York City. Now, I am completely serious when I say Bethany Frankel is by far the best Real Housewife that there has ever been as an actual person that I would ever hang out with on purpose.
Yeah.
It is possible that Countess Luann is the most fascinating to watch as far as weird things, but Bethany is by far the one that I would actually hang out with. She's been away for a while. She went off. She had a different show. She is now an actual incredibly wealthy cocktail magnet. She has a cute baby and is divorced from the guy that she was making a reality show with for a while. So Bethany came back to Real Housewives of New York City, and I could not be happier because I rarely watch any of those shows. But when I do, it's because of Bethany Frankel. Also, Sunday nights are currently packed with tons and tons and tons of really good television. Other people are into Game of Thrones, or many of us are watching the final few episodes of Mad Men. My current highlight of Sunday night television is the HBO comedy block of Veep and Silicon Valley.
Definitely.
Both of which returned this Sunday, Veep for its 4th season and Silicon Valley for its 2nd. They are both really good shows. I had fallen behind on Veep, and I sat around over the weekend and binged the entire 3rd season of Veep. Gosh, it was funny. I enjoyed it enormously. I also finished catching up on the 1st season of Silicon Valley, where I had dropped, which I had dropped out of at some point. So I caught up with the end of that and then caught those 2 premieres. Really both firing on all cylinders. I wrote a little bit about Veep on the blog today, Monday. And I will, I think, be writing something about Silicon Valley coming up. We should mention Silicon Valley includes friend of the show, Kumail Nanjiani, who mentioned it when he was here talking about the X-Files with us, but also a bunch of other really fine actors. Silicon Valley is a show that makes me laugh, which is interesting because it has a certain, like, dude quality to the humor that doesn't always make me laugh. But for some reason with that show, they get away with it and it doesn't bother me at all. And so I was very happy to see that back. Those are the shows that are kind of making me the most pleased on Sunday nights. That is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPR Monkey C. You can follow the show at NPR PCHH. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen and Glenn at GH Weldon. can follow Margaret at Mrs. Friday Next. That's all one word, Mrs. Friday Next. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. That's R-E-E-D-Y. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.